relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
Welcome, dear friends, to America First One-on-One with me, your host, Sebastian Gorka, member of the National Security Education Board of the Pentagon and formerly strategist to President Donald J. Trump. My wife calls it the Parents' Revolt. It is the amazing actions across the nation of mothers and fathers saying enough is enough with the indoctrination, the masks. We want our children to be taught, not indoctrinated. How bad is it? How deep does it extend? And what can we do about it? We're going to talk to somebody who's fighting the fight every single day, traveling the nation. Corey DeAngelis, welcome to America First One-on-One.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
You are the director of research for the American Federation for Children. Tell us how you got there, what your background is, and what your responsibilities are, and what the Federation is about. What's the mission?
Yes, our mission is to push for school choice policies to fund students as opposed to systems, to empower parents to choose the best education provider for their kid. And if that's the government-run school, then great, you can still pick your public school. If you like your public school, you can keep your public school for real this time. But if not, some of that funding would follow the child to a private school or a homeschool setting. Any education provider that works best for the kids. We believe that education funding is meant for educating children, not for propping up and protecting a particular institution, whether that's public or private. So we should fund students, not systems. A little bit about myself. My first experience with school choice was actually in San Antonio, Texas, where I grew up. I attended government-run schools all through K through 12, but for high school, I had access to something called a magnet school, which is a district-run school of choice. They can have admissions policies, so they have a strong incentive to cater to the needs of families. Well, I was able to see for 4 years straight the night and day difference between my residentially assigned school and the magnet school, which was actually on the campus of my residentially assigned government-run school. And so that had, I feel like that experience had a positive impact on my life trajectory, and I'd like more families to be able to access educational opportunities. But it shouldn't just be limited to government-run institutions. You should be able to pick private or home-based education options at the same time. After that, I did my master's and bachelor's in economics, where I really started to understand the problems with geographic monopoly power, which is inherent in the government-run school system. They don't have a strong incentive to listen to families in the current system.
Because they have a monopoly. You're locked in based upon your zip code.
That's exactly right. And when parents push back at the school board meetings, what happens? Well, they get labeled as domestic terrorists for peacefully pushing back on divisive curriculum that's not aligned with their values. And I don't think any family should be forced to send their kid to a government-run institution for 13 years where they feel like their kids are being brainwashed. And I think that's fueled the movement over the past couple of years for educational freedom. In a way, the teachers unions have actually overplayed their hand and awakened a sleeping giant. These parents who want more of a say in their kids' education. Over the remote learning, which we should really call remotely learning because there wasn't a lot of learning going on with Zoom.
Right.
There was academic losses. There were mental health issues with the children, particularly from low-income families. And parents, however, with this remote instruction, were able to see what was going on in the classroom, which brought about another entire argument for school choice that families hadn't considered as much before.
Because they hadn't been aware of what their children were being taught or indoctrinated with. So we should be grateful, ironically, to China and the China virus, because this remote learning allowed parents to, you know, peek over the shoulder of their child and see what they were being taught about America, white fragility, or what have you. Corey, I've got to ask one naive question at the beginning. So I've been an educator for far too long, but at the advanced level. So I taught in a private college, and then I taught in the Defense Department for almost a decade. What I don't understand is why are more than 90% of all students in America in public schools? Because, you know, this is the richest nation in the world until recently. We're based upon free markets and choice. My expectation as an immigrant coming to this country, I thought, well, if people want good education, Why isn't there a market there to provide it? It's mm-hmm. what, 6-7% of private schools?
Yeah, it's very low. It's about 6-8% of kids
Why?
In private schools. Well, it's because if you want to exercise that exit option to attend a school that you're not residentially assigned to, you essentially have to pay twice. Just
unpack
imagine
that. Explain that.
So essentially, we're already paying over $15,000 per child per year through the tax system towards these government-run schools that are quote-unquote free, but we've poured more and more resources into the system year and year after year. Since 1960, the U.S. education system has poured about 287% after adjusting for inflation in per pupil education spending in the government-run school system, and outcomes have been flat.
Is there a number for the average student, how much you pay in America?
It's the most recent data, which is before the pandemic, which is a whole nother story,
right,
was already about $15,000 to $16,000 per student. It's obviously higher in some states,
yes,
over the other, but average private school tuition nationwide is only about $10,000 or $11,000, or maybe up to $12,000.
So you're paying more as a taxpayer, yep, for substandard product, quote unquote, which you really have no control over because you're locked in, yep, via zip code.
Yes, and the government school establishment will say, look, you know, families don't want exit options. There's 90% of kids in government-run schools right now, and they chose that. But no, they did not. They don't know the meaning of the word choose. If you have to pay twice to exit, that's not a fair choice. And in fact, the latest surveys that I've seen nationwide have found that if you ask families, where do you send your kids and where would you like to send your kids if the money followed the child, typically about only 30 to 40% would actually want their kids in the school that they're currently attending in the public school system.
If they had a choice to move.
Exactly. So there'd be a huge mass exodus of families into another sector if they had a real choice. And we're already seeing that even without a huge increase in school choice for all families, in that over the past couple of years, the latest data that I've seen is that there's been about public schools have lost about 1.3 million students, mostly in the places that closed the schools longer. So again, the teachers unions overplayed their hand. And in a way, this is the silver lining of the pandemic,
yes,
that parents have woken up, they're pushing back, and they're not going to sit down and shut up no matter how many times members of the establishment try to label them as domestic terrorists. It's only going to embolden them to push back even harder. Families are voting with their feet to charter schools. They've seen a 7% increase in enrollment in charter schools. Families in districts that had public schools closed, they're moving to private schools as well. Homeschooling, according to the Census Bureau, has at least doubled relative to pre-pandemic
doubled
levels. So families are already seeking out alternatives. They've
wow
woken up. They've seen that the traditional system doesn't care much about them, and they're also pushing for policies to allow the funding to follow the child. In 2021, 19 states expanded or enacted programs to fund students as opposed to systems. We're
right,
calling
you just
it
stole
the year of
my
school
thunder
choice.
That was going to be my next question. You said 19. Just give us a couple. Give a couple of states where, from your perspective as somebody who's pro-choice in terms of education, which states have followed this? The money should follow the child, not the institution. What is a good model?
Yeah, so West Virginia was the biggest victory in 2021.
Really?
In 2020, the year before, they had zero charter schools. They had zero private school choice programs, but their legislators and the people started to wake up over the pandemic period and started to figure out that the teachers unions aren't as powerful as they think that they are, and that parents are actually the more powerful special interest group. They have more power in numbers, and the reality is parents are going to fight for the right to educate their kids as they see fit, harder than anyone will ever fight to take that right away from them. Parents care about their kids more than anybody else. But they passed what's now the most expansive education savings account program in the nation. This is the gold standard of school choice.
West Virginia.
They're still implementing the program, but all families, regardless of income, will be able to take their kids' state education dollars to the public school if they want. But they'd also be able to take it to a charter school or private school, or be able to use it for homeschool curriculum or tutoring services.
And I got to ask you, who made that happen? Just very quickly, because I want to ask you in 30 seconds, who made that happen in West Virginia?
It's the parents pushing back and voicing their concerns, and legislators who stand up to the status quo who fight for families as opposed to protecting the government school monopoly. At the end of the day, it takes pressure from the people, but also for the legislators to do the right thing. And for groups like American Federation for Children, where I'm at, advocating at a national level for funding following the student.
Amazing. What a success. Who would have thought West Virginia as a huge success story? Guys, check out the Federation, the American Federation for Children. It's federationforchildren.org. And Corey's Twitter account, he's very, very active. He always DMs me his latest tweets. DeAngelis Corey. That's DeAngelis Corey. I'm Sebastian Gorka. If you enjoy this show as much as we love making it for you, don't forget to subscribe. Go to your favorite podcast platform. Go to Spotify. Plug in my name, America First, Sebastian Gorka. Never miss an episode. Write a little review. Makes a difference. Share the links. If you haven't done so already, please register right now for our amazing Stand With Israel tour. 10 days later, we are traveling to the Holy Land with my Salem colleague, the director of 2000 Mules, Dinesh D'Souza, and his lovely wife, Debbie. We're going to be walking where our Lord and Savior walked the earth. Yes, if you've never been, if you've only read about it, we're going to be there on the shores of the Sea of Galilee, on the Temple Mount, in the Garden of Gethsemane. Even if you've been to Israel before, you haven't been with me and Dinesh. Register today. Call 855-565-5519 or just go to standwithisraeltour.com. That number again, a little more slowly this time, Gorka. 855-565-5519. Standwithisraeltour.com. Standwithisraeltour.com.
Mike Lindell has a true passion to help everyone get the best sleep of their lives. Therefore, he created the Giza Dream bed sheets. They look and feel incredible, which translates to an even better night's sleep for you. Mike's latest amazing deal is the sale of the year. For a limited time, you will receive 60% off the Giza Dream sheets that come with a 60-day money-back guarantee and a 10-year warranty. You'll receive a full set for as low as $39.99. And for a limited time, with any purchase, you'll receive Mike's soft cover book free when you use promo code G-O-R-K-A. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener square, and use promo code Gorka. Along with this offer, you'll also get deep, deep discounts on all his MyPillow products, including the MyPillow mattress topper, MyPillow towel sets, and so much more. Call 800-829-8468, promo code Gorka. Just go to MyPillow.com, promo code G-O-R-K-A.
So you mentioned the unions, Corey. I just watched with my wife an amazing movie, Rebecca Frederick's Whose Children Are They?, that you are in. You're interviewed multiple times. I knew it was bad, but I didn't know how bad it was. The interviews with teachers who've been teaching for 30, 40, 50 years, the intimidation from the union. So I don't want to paint a picture that it's the parents against all the evil teachers. We've had people like Lilith Venetian, an amazing, brave music teacher from here in Virginia, who's speaking out against the indoctrination. So give us a sense, as somebody who's on the ground, who's traveling, who's fighting for our children, give us the picture of what the unions are really doing. Randy Weingarten, who earns, what, $570,000 as the president of the teachers' union. That's even more than Fauci, who's the richest bureaucrat in America. Talk to us about the role of the unions, how they behave, how they intimidate, and also give us a fair picture of the teachers. Not all of them want to be pro-BLM neo-Marxists, do they?
Yeah, you can be pro-teacher and be anti-teachers unions, because the teachers union bosses like Randy Weingarten often don't push for policies that benefit the great teachers that already exist in the public school and private school classrooms. You have Randy Weingarten making over 9 times the average teacher salary in the U.S.
Yeah, right, because a teacher's about 50 grand.
Yeah, 50, 60 grand on average.
And she's making over 500.
$570,000. And if you look just at the trends over time, I mean, you got to look at the data. Since 1970, per pupil education expenditures in the United States after adjusting for inflation increased by about 152% in the U.S. But average teacher salaries only increased by about 8% in real terms. So we're throwing more and more money into the system. It's going to the superintendents and administrative bloat.
The associate deans of diversity right?
And so that's good for teachers union bosses like Randy Weingarten because that means more dues-paying members. If you just paid the teachers better, especially the ones that are doing a good job, well, you don't get an additional dues-paying member. And so that means less money for the teachers that are doing a good job, more money for the union bosses and union leadership. Another report by Ben Scafidi at Kennesaw State University looked between the years of 1992 and 2014, similarly finding nationwide an increase in about 27 per pupil education expenditures in real terms, whereas teacher salaries over that period actually dropped by 2% after adjusting for inflation. So again, he said the same thing, that there's a staffing surge, they're putting more people into the buildings. We saw this with COVID as well. The latest budget numbers I've seen with Los Angeles public schools, they were planning to increase their per pupil education expenditures over the past couple of years by about 69%. And when asked district officials what they were going to spend the money on, they were planning on spending the money on increasing the number of teachers in the system by 8%, the number of custodial workers by about 25%, the number of principals and
assistant
and psychological support staff and counselors by about 80%. But they lost about 7% of their school-age population. In what other industry do you lose 7% of your customer base and you start hiring
more people.
And more people? Well, once you start to understand the incentives of the union bosses, it starts to make some more sense. And school choice can benefit teachers, too. I've actually written about this in an article at the Washington Examiner called School Choice Benefits Teachers, Too. Five studies on the topic have found that private and charter school competition generally leads to higher teacher salaries in the public school system. Why? Because
you got to compete.
Exactly. And the current system, I actually feel kind of bad for some of the teachers who complain about having to reach into their pockets each year to pay for supplies because there's not enough money going towards them. It's going towards the system. But the problem isn't with their private and charter school competition. The problem is with their employer, which happens to be this massive geographic monopoly that has zero incentive to funnel the resources into the classroom.
Well, there's no pressure to improve.
That's right.
That's right. If you're not in a real competitive market, then you can just suck in the funding from the state. Yep. You can suck in the dues for the union. Where's the pressure to improve? I don't see. And under COVID, tell me if I'm wrong, but Corey, every time I saw another decision from another authority about more masks, more shutdown, more hybrid schooling, stay at home, it seemed to me as if the unions do whatever they want.
That's right.
The interests of the student or the community or the parents are nugatory. They're irrelevant. And it's just the union's interest. Am I seeing it wrong?
Yeah, they were able to hold children's education hostage, essentially in perpetuity, in order to secure multiple multi-billion dollar ransom payments from the government. And in some places, like in Detroit and in Chicago with the teachers union, in 2022, they were still fighting to keep the dang schools closed 2 years into the mess. 2 weeks to slow the spread essentially turned into 2 years to flatten a generation of kids. And it worked for them. They got the ransom payments. They got about $190 billion from the taxpayer.
What did they spend that on? What on earth did they spend
Well, you have some reporting at the Daily Wire suggesting that some of this money went to diversity, equity, and inclusion officers. You have the Associated Press reporting that some of it went to football stadiums. You had the Wall Street Journal just reporting the other day that with the American Rescue Plan funding of about over $120 billion, 93% of the funding hasn't even been spent yet, but yet the schools are open now. It was a taxpayer shakedown. It was never about safety, and it was always about politics and power dynamics. They did it because they knew that they could. And it's not a problem with the employees in the system. It's a problem with the system itself. They get your money regardless of whether they open their doors for business, but it's worse than that. They knew that when they kept their doors closed, that they can get a financial benefit for doing so. Right. It was a perverse incentive, and it worked for them. Look, the private schools were able to open from the get-go. Yeah. The grocery stores, the daycares, everyone else was able to do it.
It's hostage-taking. It's ransom. That's all it is. We're talking to the National Director of Research for the American Federation for Children, Corey DeAngelis. If you enjoyed this show, support those that make it possible. Great patriots like Mike Lindell. He's under assault. The left wants to cancel him. Let's show him we have his back. And also, get a good night's sleep. The MyPillow, 51 million sold. The pillow that never gets hot, never loses shape. President Trump loves them. My whole team uses them. Order today and you'll get up to 66% off his line of more than 150 products. MyPillow.com, promo code G-O-R-K-A, or call 800-829-8468. That's 800-829-8468. MyPillow.com, promo code G-O-R-K-A. Just treat yourself. You know you're worth it. Corey, my wife has called what we're witnessing across the nation, especially under COVID, the parents' revolt. We've had some superstars on the show. We've had Stacey Langton, Chantel Cooper. We've had Tatiana Ibrahim. Is this a sporadic pushback by mama bears and some angry dads? You're traveling the nation on behalf of the Federation. Is this happening even in Democrat strongholds like California and Massachusetts?
Yeah, this is happening everywhere. It's a nationwide phenomenon. And look, parents have figured out that the system doesn't care all that much for them. And I think they're not going away anytime soon. We've talked about how there are entrenched special interests in the current system, the superintendents unions, the teachers unions, and it's kind of been that way for a long time. But now there's a new special interest group in town. These parents that just want more of a say in their kids' education.
Isn't that weird that a parent would want to actually have an influence? And let's look at the Commonwealth of Virginia, where somebody who was a pretty milquetoast candidate, not exactly MAGA, Glenn Youngkin, who had a very staid center of the road, I want to open up Virginia for business, when Terry McAuliffe, who thinks it's his governorship to take, says in that debate, no, parents shouldn't have anything to do with what their kids learn in school. That 10-second became a soundbite which propelled Youngkin to victory. So right now, are you feeling confident that this is a wave across America, Corey?
Yeah, it's a blueprint for success, particularly for Republicans going forward. Terry McAuliffe said in the debate that I don't think parents should be telling schools what they should teach. What a total ridiculous thing to say in the current context. Totally tone deaf, and it backfired on him. And the thing is, Terry McAuliffe tried to double, triple, quadruple down on the anti-parent rhetoric, and even had Randy Weingarten stumping for him the night before the election. The Washington Post exit polling found that education was the number two issue in that election, and those voters went to Glenn Youngkin by about 6 percentage points. So in a state that went 10 percentage points to Biden, swung just a year later 12 percentage points the other way to go to Glenn Youngkin by about 2 percentage points. And he won it on education. And look, Republicans in particular can be the parent party if they lean into it and show the hypocrisy of their opponents who send their own kids to private school and then fight against it for less advantaged families. And then with Terry McAuliffe, it's a lot of these people have these deeply unpopular beliefs that they actually truly believe that the government owns the kids and that the family shouldn't have the final say in their kids' education. But when people who believe that say it out loud, it backfires on them. We saw it happen in Michigan, too. The Michigan Democratic Party tweeted out something that had the idea of, you know, it takes a village, that the community should determine what your kids learn.
Right. Well, which is Maoist, which is communist, that, you know, you don't have control over your children because the state owns your children. It is absolute communist thinking. Will you explain why, for those who are intimidated, truly intimidated, who don't see themselves as the next Chantel Cooper or Tatiana Ibrahim, it's having somebody's back is just as important. When you go to that school board meeting, you may not be the person on the microphone, but if you stand with them as a parent or a grandparent, the importance of numbers is what I'm trying to get
at,
Corey.
That's how special interest groups are effective. You can't just go out and fight on your own. and expect to get a lot of things done. Maybe your clip will go viral and that's helpful, but you have to have a support group. And at the same time, what do politicians think about? They think about numbers.
Numbers.
How many votes am I going to get? And with the case of Glenn Youngkin, those moms and dads that were showing up at the school board meetings, they didn't stop there. They showed up at the ballot box at the same time. And I've seen some recent polling showing that the GOP is winning with parents against Biden by a large degree. So look, it's politically profitable to support educational freedom, and it can be politically disastrous to come out against parental rights in education.
But the left doesn't, they seem to be doubling down, don't they? The teachers' unions, the Democrats, because that's an incestuous relationship based upon the money the unions give to the Democrats, but there doesn't seem to be any glimmer of rational thinking there.
Well, it's almost like they have to do it. And I think this is what Terry McAuliffe did. He figured that he leaned in against parental rights so much that if he came out for parental rights after that and reversed course, the parents would have still not believed in him.
Right.
And they would have figured he's
just the unions would have been angry and who are funding him.
Yes, so he was essentially in a lose-lose scenario, which is why it's an especially advantageous position right now for people who already support educational freedom, and they don't rely on these huge campaign contributions from the unions.
Right.
You're in a good place if you lean into parental rights and get your opponent to either come out for or against it. If they're against parental rights and they come out against it, well, the parents are going to backlash against them.
Yeah.
But if they come out in favor of parental rights, which they should do because parents are on the right side of this, well, then the unions are going to come out against them and won't support them as much anymore. I would say partner with the parents, but if you have to choose one or the other. But the dumbest thing that a supporter of parental rights could do right now as a politician is to say nothing about it and
to not get your opponent
to say something about it.
It's a burning issue. It's so obvious as the nose on your face. Corey, let's try and diagnose the heart of the issue here. Where did all of this come from? What is the transmission belt of this idea that we have control, we're the teachers, we can teach that white children are going to be oppressors, black children will be victims, math is oppressive. If you say 2 + 2 = 4, that's an expression of power. We have the New Left, we have the Frankfurt School. What is the role of teacher colleges in the propagation of not the indoctrination in the schools, but the training of the indoctrinators?
Yeah, so it does start with the universities, with these education programs that have this Maoist kind of curriculum. Then it bleeds down into the K-12 system. And then that's only intensified by the fact that you don't have school choice. I mean, there's no incentive to listen to the needs of families in the current system. So if you have someone in the classroom who feels like indoctrinating kids and doesn't really feel like focusing on the basics, math, reading, and writing, it's easier to indoctrinate than to educate. I think that's part of the problem here.
Right.
And if there's no feedback mechanism from the bottom up, there's no incentive for them to change. And with school choice, it fixes this problem in two ways. One, families can take their funding to a school that does align with their values. Yes, some private schools do have critical race theory and other types of things that conservatives might not want, but that's not all the private schools. And at least you could choose an alternative.
And the public ones have it, but deny it. They say, it's not happening. Well, if it's not happening, then how are these kids coming home and asking their white parents if you're an oppressor?
Well, it's gaslighting. They just changed the definition of critical race theory, and then they don't really contend with the things that families are actually concerned about, whether you want to call it critical race theory or something else.
Right.
They don't want to get to the specifics because a lot of the things that they defend are really indefensible. But the other way that school choice and the funding following the child resolves a lot of these one-size-fits-all problems is that if the funding follows the student, well, you can sort to the school that works best for you. But then the public schools will have an incentive to focus on the basics and to not focus on topics that are politically divisive that upset their customer
base. They have to do their job, basically.
Exactly.
They have to do their job.
Why would you focus on concepts that irritate 80% of your customers they can leave.
And make the children less capable once they graduate, which also affects the reputation of the institution. Corey, please follow this man, DeAngelis. Corey, it is the American Federation for Children, federationforchildren.org. We're going to talk about one of their very important new initiatives in a moment. But talk to us about the role of federal government. So not just the unions and the schools and the school districts, but the fact that you have the Association of School Boards collude with the White House secretly to then launch an investigation using the DOJ and the FBI to target parents because they want their children to see their faces of their teachers and their fellow children. And they want to not have bigoted indoctrination occur in the schools. How much targeting of innocent parents helped your mission for school choice?
Yeah, I'll first say that it was a huge government overreach. Everyone saw that it was ridiculous to try to essentially bully and silence parents into submission. But the thing is here is that it had the opposite of its intended effect. This has only emboldened parents to push back even harder. They're parents. They're not domestic terrorists. And and all the families across the nation saw right through what was happening with the National School Boards Association. Even the lefty state-level school boards associations started to see through all of the nonsense with the NSBA. And now you have 22 state-level school boards associations that have withdrawn their funding and
their
membership.
That's huge, 22.
Yeah, so it's time for a name change of the NSBA. Can they really call themselves national anymore if
right.
they've lost 22 states in the past 6 months? They've essentially imploded because of their own actions. And that goes to show you, back to something we were talking about earlier, that if parents band together and coordinate to push back, they can actually change things. We've seen legislation with school choice changing. We've seen an implosion of the National School Boards Association. It turns out it's not a good idea to label parents as domestic terrorists for wanting more of a say in their kids' education.
And the argument, you sent me a very interesting tweet from a hearing earlier this week from Byron Donalds of Florida. The argument that, well, this is a school and the First Amendment and freedom of speech and the U.S. Constitution. Let's play a Congressman Donald's response to that accusation.
I don't want children being focused, having their attention distracted from actual learning. If we're going to talk about history, let's talk about history. But if we're going to bring in subjective material into the classroom, that is the problem that has some parents upset in the United States. And that's the concern that we need to think about. That is not a free speech issue because students are a captive audience. They don't get to leave. Adults, we can walk out anytime we want to. The kids cannot. That's why this is such an important discussion to be had. Madam Chair, thank you so much for the indulgence. I yield back.
So this is so obvious, but somebody had to say it. You're not at a rally. You're not in a bar. It's kids in a school. And if the teacher says something that is not relevant or inappropriate, the kid can't say, excuse me, I'm out of here.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So it's not a free speech issue on the part of the employees in the system. Because, again, the parents and the students can't just leave. And during this hearing, I believe some of the people on the committee were trying to make the argument that the employees in the government school system should be able to keep secrets from the parents when it comes to sexuality and other topics. But that is government overreach. There shouldn't be secrets between government employees and individual families. And yet again, this is another great reason for school choice. If something like this is happening in your school and the parent finds out, they shouldn't have to go fight at a school board meeting where it might take years for things to change. And for an investigation to happen, they should be able to say right now, give me that $15,000, that's for my child, and let me take them somewhere else. And who's the most likely to be trapped in the system today? It's the least advantaged who can't afford to pay for private school tuition and fees out of pocket. The most advantaged at least already have school choice in a sense, where they can live in the best public school districts that meet their needs in however
they can afford to pay taxes and tuition.
That's right. So funding students directly allows more families to have that opportunity. So in that sense, school choice is an equalizer, and forcing kids into a failing system perpetuates inequities year after year.
We're talking to Corey DeAngelis, National Director of Research for the American Federation for Children. All right, we could discuss these issues. I'm so vested in them, or rather, you know, imbued with a certain amount of knowledge because of my work, the work my wife does for the Heritage Foundation against CRT, that I have a long list of questions. But let's just end on what people listening, the millions of people, parents, grandparents, can do to be a part of this. So you have the American Federation for Children, that's federationforchildren.org. Then you have two more things. You have the Education Freedom Pledge, which is at edfreedompledge.com. That's edfreedompledge.com. And then you have a very interesting thing for teachers who are experiencing bad things happening at their schools. So talk to us about the Education Pledge first.
Yeah, the Education Freedom Pledge. Voters and lawmakers can go all across the country and sign up at educationfreedompledge.com if they support the right of parents to show up at school board meetings and voice their opinions, and if they also support things like having the funding follow the child, school choice policies. That's educationfreedompledge.com.
All right. And then what is the corruption tip line?
Yes, so I recently uncovered documents from teachers and other employees in a school district in San Antonio, Texas, where their bosses, the superintendent and their principals, were allegedly pressuring them to vote a certain way for a ballot initiative, which is illegal in Texas. So if any teachers or other school employees feel pressured from their superiors, whether it's the superintendent or the principal, to vote a certain way on a ballot initiative or for any type of election, they can anonymously submit their tips at corruptiontipline.com.
All right. How did nobody else have that URL already registered? Corruptiontipline.com. It's protecting the good teachers, the good employees. Also, all of this is about our children. Education Freedom Pledge. That's edfreedompledge.com. God bless you, Corey DeAngelis, and all of your colleagues at the Federation, because it really, you know, who was it? Oh, yeah. It was Lenin who said, "Give me their children for 4 years, and I will plant seeds that can never be uprooted." That was the mastermind of the communist revolution. Hitler said much the same thing. "Give me their children, and I will own their future." We cannot let that happen here in America. There are some brave parents, some brave teachers fighting back, and also the Federation, federationforchildren.org. Dear friends, if you enjoy this show as much as we love providing it for you, be sure to be subscribed. Go to Spotify, plug in my name, write a review, send the links. And as ever, since it's Friday, we will end with the words of my former employer, Donald J. Trump.
We will not bend. We will not break. We will not yield. We will never give in. We will never give up. We will never back down. We will never, ever surrender. My fellow Americans, our movement is far from over. In fact, our fight has only just begun.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never before seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to salemnow.com. Salemnow.com.